So, why are we here? Why are we in this place today, in the Church of the Incarnation? At Pope Francis's general audience on February 12th, he gave an answer to the question, why are we at Mass? He says, going to Mass and receiving the Eucharist should make a difference in the way Catholics live. They should be more accepting of others and more aware of their sinfulness. He continues, if we don't feel the need of God's mercy and don't think we are sinners, it's better not to go to Mass. The Eucharist is a celebration of Christ's gift of himself for the salvation of sinners, which is why the Mass begins with people confessing they are sinners and begging for the Lord's mercy. Something to think about. I think it's courageous to say it's better not to go to Mass if we don't feel we are in the need of God's mercy and we don't think we are sinners. I would be afraid to. But I'm not the Pope. He can say stuff like that. And I wonder, if we don't come to Mass, won't we miss out on the very reflection that we are sinners and in need of God's help? Where else would we hear that message? I'm a big believer in bring the body and the mind will follow. But maybe on those days when we don't believe, we don't receive the Eucharist. Because if we don't think we need Jesus' salvation, there may not be a point. It's just a thought. So does coming to Mass make a difference in your life? You know, we've been working our way through the Sermon on the Mount these past few weeks. First, there were the Beatitudes. These are my favorite wisdom teachings of Jesus, mostly because they're simple truths and promises. They are not easy, but they offer us instructions on how to be holy and close to God. Next, Jesus said, we are the salt of the earth and light of the world. We bring flavor and hope to a troubled world. Then last week, Jesus began teaching the commandments in a new way. Just like today, he says, you have heard it said. And then he names one of the commandments. And then he says, but I say to you, and teaches a new way of understanding the commandment. The previous week's gospel readings should have made a difference in our lives, if for no other reason than to point out that as Christians, we believe and teach lessons that are different than what the world offers. If we were to practice what Christ has taught us in the past few weeks, our attitude and outlook on life would have been revolutionized. And this Sunday's liturgy is a clear call to holiness, using an expression from Vatican II. The first reading states it unequivocally, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. One writer describes the holiness of God's people as drops of water in the great ocean of divine holiness. The readings also tell us how this holiness needs to be shown in our lives. It is above all shown in love towards our neighbor with whom we live day by day, at home, at work, on the street, in the supermarket, and even on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and any other place in our social network. It's also shown in respecting one's own spiritual identity, as it says in the second reading, God's temple is holy, and you are that temple. The readings also tell us that holiness is shown in the true wisdom that God grants to those who love and seek him, and who know that all belong to you, and you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. In last week's readings, Jesus' teaching had a certain logic to it. Any reasonable person could understand his teaching. You shall not kill includes not hating your brothers and sisters. You shall not commit adultery includes not committing the sin mentally. You know, the old lust in my heart that President Jimmy Carter once confessed. That was for the over 40 crowd, I guess. Might remember that. Jesus is telling us that the commandments are not about crossing some line, some external standard, but using the internal standard of the law written on our heart by God. He is telling us that we should not even be walking in the general direction of sin. And yes, we know this way of living is hard, given the number and types of temptations we have to face. So, holiness, perfection, and foolishness are the words that keep repeating to me from today's gospel, today's liturgy. And they are in contrast to the logic of last week's readings, especially the foolishness part. Holiness is used in the first reading and the second reading. So what does it mean to us? For some of us, the idea of being holy makes us wince. I mean, we wonder if we can really be holy. And maybe it would help if we looked at some of the omitted verses from Leviticus, where examples of holiness are given. Most of them have to do with the compassionate treatment of our neighbors. For example, a holy person wouldn't harvest their wheat or pick their grapes too carefully. Poor people would come after them and pick up after what the holy people had left for them in a process called gleaning. And the Corinthians will honor each other's holiness if they stop sniping at each other. So if this is definitions of holiness or practices of holiness, they can be hard, but they're not impossible. And therefore, it's not impossible for us to be holy. In the second reading, Paul tells us, if anyone among yourselves considers himself wise in this age, let him become a fool so as to become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness in the eyes of God. We think it wise to hang on to our pride when somebody strikes us. We think it wise to hang on to our possessions like a tunic or a cloak. We think it wise not to let people take advantage of us by pressing us into service for longer than we agree to. And finally, we think it wise not to give too much to the ones who ask, lest there be nothing left for us. Jesus and Paul are teaching us wisdom here. I myself struggle with this as I try to apply this teaching. I struggle between the prudence of a good steward and the wisdom of Jesus. And I invite you to ask what this teaching means to you. In today's gospel, the word perfect is used in the Sermon on the Mount. But in Matthew's version, the Sermon on the Plain, the word merciful is used. Certainly we can practice mercy. We can have compassion for our brothers and sisters, just as God has compassion and mercy on us. And also, just as God has mercy on the just and the unjust, our friends and our adversaries, so we can do as Jesus commands, love our enemy. It's within our capability. And I'm sure we can find many examples in our lives where we can put loving our enemy into practice, from our home to our work to our political parties. For if we aren't practicing love our enemy, as hard as that may be, can we really say we are practicing Christians?